Namaste. So we take up today a subject about determinisms, which we can say is in continuation with the other two talks on the law of karma. So first was the law of karma, where the essence was that the law of karma is not about reward and punishment, but it is a law of evolution, learning and growth through experience. This is the main thing about the law of karma. Then the second was about universal justice. Well, if everything is about learning and growth, then what about justice? There are wicked people. There are people who do so much harm, individuals and groups. So what about them? So there is something like a justice which does operate in this universe. But its purpose again is not punishment, though it seems like a punishment, but to restore the balance. So when there is an excess in one direction, then the law of universal justice comes in and it balances. But that takes time. It's expressed very beautifully as you sow, so will you reap. Or if you sow the wind, you reap the whirlwind. So this is the law of justice. And the third is, because then comes the big question, the nutty question, and it's about determinism. So determinism means that then what really determines our actions? This is a very big question, that are we really free? We talk about that I made a choice. Now in the karmic law, we are presuming that man has made a choice, and based on his choice, there are consequences. But who has made the choice? Certainly not the true man. We are not even aware of the true man. So what really is making the choice? Now when we turn to the Gita, and again Sri Aurobindo's thought, he reminds us that basically 99% of the time, all that we call as my choice is basically a play of forces. We are pushed from behind and we act. And we think it is I who have made a choice. And to realize it is a very important thing. Because otherwise we think, oh, I am choosing. So when we are not really making a choice, but we are being driven by the blind mechanism or determinisms of nature, then what happens to us as an individual? Now here comes the catch, that behind nature is the lord of nature. So what happens within this nature? There is a wisdom that operates, and nature has created a system within herself, so to say, that based on what she pushes us to choose, she will also show us what it leads to. It's like a child being pushed to put his hand into the fire, and then he learns it hurts. Then for some time he shrinks, then he learns how to handle it, till he grows up and discovers that this fire is one manifestation of energy. And if he can one day learn how to handle this energy, this outer fire is an expression of the inner fire. So this is a long process. It starts this way. So in the beginning stage of evolution, the soul is in a state which is called as Anish. It is not the Lord. It is driven by nature. How can we even say that, you know, it will take the consequences? Now, there are consequences, but these consequences are given by nature, not because I have chosen something, but it's a mechanism whereby it is educating the psychic being within who is asleep. It is literally waking it up and making it grow through all these experiences. And the important thing is, very interesting, that, you know, even if it is a delusion that there is a free choice, Shivananda says very beautifully, it is the most powerful delusion, even if we say it's the most powerful delusion, that I am the doer, though nature is the doer. This is what the Gita says. Yet it is a necessary delusion. We can't get rid of it. Like supposing we come to know that, well, I don't have a free will, nature is deciding. So what do I do? Do I do or I don't do? Now the catch here is that when I don't do, that also is an action. That also is a kind of choice that nature has made. So this is human system. The ego self is inbuilt in such a way that it will be dragged to make the choices. That is what Shri Krishna reminds to Arjuna in the Gita. That look here, Arjuna, this is not consistent with your nature. You have the nature of a Kshatriya. Even if you are away from here, today you are saying that I want to take sannyas because you are under the influence of tamo guna. So there is nature has these three modes, and depending upon these three modes, we make the choices, or at least we think we are making the choices, but nature is working out within us. So the first mode is tamo guna. So there is a tamasic prakriti, and people make choices when they are in a state of tamas, which leads towards more and more inertia, lethargy, comfort zone, and they seek extreme like violence, extreme pleasures, drugs, etc. Because otherwise they don't feel alive. Music also will be like that. So what happens? They go through this experience, and at the end of it, they realize that this is a very frightening nightmare. But this nightmare is needed for them to come alive. It's like Kumbhakarna doesn't wake up unless there is a lot of loud noise and a lot of food and other things. So tamogun begins to, the soul begins to, out of unease state, begins to wake up. So yet it is not the Lord. It is now driven by rajogun. So it has this idea that I am the doer. So I must do this, I must achieve that, I must conquer that. There is ambition and wanting this, wanting that, desires, and the full play of lust and greed and all the things. Even there are higher aspects of rajoguna, more beautiful in life, like love and affection and all these things. So in rajoguna, again, the soul is going through certain experiences. It discovers, for example, let's take the experience of Alexander. Now, what was the essence of his life? He has been the cause, at least, of massacre of thousands of people, rapes, plunders, and loot, and right all the way from Greece he comes. And what is the lesson he gets? The lesson he gets is from one of the Indian yogi who is jumping from one spot to another. And he says, why are you doing like this? He says, because I am not a fool like you. What do you mean I am not a fool? You are not a fool like me. You know that I am Alexander, I can cut you off. He says, that is your foolishness. You think that you possess this whole land, whereas you possess only that much point on which you are standing. Then there is another very interesting story. He takes that yogi all the way, and you know, he meets Diogenes. So Diogenes is a local Greek saint, and he meets Diogenes, who used to live inside a little dog's you know, a place where dog used to sleep. So he says, he goes and meets Diogenes, because everybody has said he's very wise, and he stands in front of Diogenes, and Diogenes doesn't care anything. He is absorbed in his own inwardness. And then Alexander says, I am Alexander the Great. He says, so what? Ask whatever you want and I shall give you. And Diogenes says, just get out of my way, because you are obstructing the sun. In fact, this thing is very interesting. He says, I am Alexander the Great. He says, I am Diogenes the dog. So, you know, there is another outlook where these people have gone beyond. But when Alexander hears it, he is so shocked, something within his soul springs out. And that is why, as the legend goes, how far it is true or not, but the essence is very beautiful, that when he is being, you know, he knows that death is inevitable. He has been poisoned by his own closest friend, because he knows that this man is going to be the cause of so much trouble to everybody. And he is his well-wisher, and yet he is poisoned. And so when he is going to go to the grave, he says, look, keep my hands open. What for? Because I want people to know that though it seems I have conquered the world, but I go empty-handed. We come empty-handed and go empty-handed. Now this whole life, driven by intense rajogun, the essence is that you really can't acquire anything. You can't possess anything. It's an illusion in which you live. Now that palace of illusion is broken. Now it's not about punishing Alexander for all the misdeeds he did. That happens, whatever happened in his life. There was a force which met him, the force of, you know, the famous Puru, the king Porus, as he was called, who met him and was his match. I mean, even though he seems to have lost because of his own people's misdeeds, defection, but yet Alexander, it was a shock to him. He never imagined that, you know, I would meet such valiant warriors. So this is the lesson in a sense of an intensely rajasic life, that in the end there is nothing which I can carry. Then next life one would go through higher and higher levels of rajas. So nature is carrying, the soul is still anish. Then it enters into sattva, and the soul begins to little bit wake up. That's the time when people begin to question, what really is life about? What is the law? Is there a law at all? Is there God? Is there something greater, truth? So the questioning mind, which wants to understand things, is not driven just by ambition or an emotion or by bodily needs or by desires, but there is a need to know. And that becomes the third level of determinisms of nature, the sattvic man. He wants to balance, he wants harmony, but still he is living within the ego self. And now the ego is trying to do things according to its own understanding. So there we see that there is some kind of a dawn taking place. Now in all these three, nature is the worker. But this is an illusion that I am the doer. The feeling that I am the one who is giving charity, I am the one who is doing good deeds, I am the one who is reading the scriptures, I am the one who is following the scriptures. And actually it doesn't take one to read the Gita to understand it. If you really look at our own life, analyze it even as a young person, the mother knew it as early as she says, when I was a child I could see that nature is the soul doer. How? Very simply, if you look at all the qualities that one may have, whether it be intelligence, whether it be mental capacity, whether it be capacities of eyes or bodily capacities of limbs or strength or, you know, the vital energy, anything we take it, is it something which I have got it by my own efforts? No. Nature, through heredity or otherwise, gave it to me. Now, why it gave it to me? Now, here it comes that we don't have to bring in the law of karma in the form of reward and punishment, but in the form of determinism. I have gone through the tamasic evolution. Now, I'm in the rajas state. So, as the soul is waking up, that kind of nature comes around. As it wakes up, another kind of nature comes around. So, by the look, it begins to change and shape the nature. It draws those elements which are needed for its own next experience, and that next experience may be one life or maybe a few lives through all the ups and downs. So depending on the need, all these things come. And then also when we see effort, there is energy. Where does the energy come from? Nothing is really mine. It's a basic analysis. We will discover that there is nothing which we can call as ourselves. And that's a great freedom. It liberates us from the ego self. But nevertheless, there is a long time the illusion continues that I am the one who is the doer. Then after sattva comes a time when one is ready, that now nature is ready to take the next leap. And everything, the body, the brain, the heart is formed by nature in such a way that, and the experience of life will come in such a way that there will be an increasing detachment from nature. So this is the next step of evolution where we become Sakshi, the witness. Now traditional yoga doesn't go beyond it. So either we are Anish or we are Sakshi, and by constantly witnessing the modes of nature and knowing what nature is flowing this way, that way, we can withdraw and eventually take the liberation. Now this liberation may come through just withdrawing into a state of witness self, or as the Gita puts it, goes beyond the witness self and says, no, continue to do action. Action will still follow the law of determinism, but you dedicate it to me, do it desirelessly, do it by constant remembrance and offering, and you will find that great peace of liberation, that wide liberation of another kind of liberation of constantly dwelling in the divine. So now we have two modes of nature. One is the Sharobhav, in which the soul is completely flowing within nature. Nature is constantly changing, so it is Sharobhav. This is the first step of the soul. The second is Akshara, when by withdrawing it discovers that state which is a state of immutable peace, and that is the the state of Shivatva, the Brahman, call it whatever, but it reaches by an extreme separation, it reaches there. But there is a next step, the Gita speaks of that, and that step is dwelling in the Purushottama. Now, Purushottama, of course, human consciousness doesn't become Purushottama, there is only one Purushottama, but it can dwell in the Lord. So, the next step of that is the Isha, the Master. So the being, the soul within us becomes master of nature. Till the soul has learned to separate itself from nature, there is actually no free choice. Yet we have to live, even if we want, we cannot change this. We have to live as if we have a free choice. Even this thinking that I don't have a free choice, therefore let me just do whatever it comes to me, will not help. Because we will still be driven by nature. So even somebody who knows that it doesn't matter, he will still be driven by his nature. A good, honest human being who is driven by sattva will remain good and honest human being even if he discovered that there is no reward I am going to get out of it. And a person who is an evil doer, a wicked person, will continue to be driven by that, because that is a stage of evolution. Even he is promised by all the great religions that there is a seat booked for you in heaven. So basically there are two or three stages. First is that determinism of nature, where we are endowed with certain capacities, we seem to make certain choices, but it is the nature which is actually operating within us, making choices for us and giving us the illusion that it's me, I who am making. And it's perfectly fine. This is necessary. So when mother was asked once by Amal Kiran, Tell me, mother, I don't want philosophy. I've read a lot about it. Shobindra, by the way, written a very beautiful essay on it, All Will and Free Will. So, and he gives example of, Napoleon, who believed in destiny. So he said, you believe in destiny, so why, and fate, why do you then plan and decide and organize things? He said, because it is fated that I plan and organize. So he says very beautifully, by simply believing that there is no free will, man doesn't automatically, abandon it. He will still make his choices. He must make his choices. It's the path of his evolution. In fact, he can't abandon it. So, but he should know that this is a very temporary arrangement. So when mother was asked by Amal Kiran that, mother, tell me in one single word, yes or no, whether there is free will or not. Don't give me any philosophy. So mother remained silent for a while. Then mother says, yes. And then she says that, well, yes, it is given to man. Nature has given to man. So this free will, we have to make choices. But we must understand that at this point of time, what is making a choice in us is the forces of nature. Then we separate ourselves. And then next step is, when we discover the true self within, the psychic being within, it is only then that truly speaking, our own choice, yani in the sense that this idea that I have done a deed and therefore I am going to reap the reward and suffer the consequence, it is a paradox, because I am already a slave of ignorance. How can I make the choice? I mean, as a prisoner, we have no choices, So we have to first be free beings. And when we become free beings, then yes, our choices, and that makes a lot of difference, because then our choices also have much greater repercussions than when choices are made in ignorance. When we are in ignorance, nature knows that we are ignorant. But when we have discovered a truth and we are moving in that direction, of course, one who is living in the soul will stay aligned to the divine will. But when we are already moving towards that, and then when we make choices, sometimes it can have far more serious consequences, because it means something we have not learned. Nature has not taught us something. So we, for a moment, come back. Of course, we learn the lesson much faster and then come out. So this is the way determinisms of nature work, and these determinisms shape our destiny in an evolutionary hierarchy. This is what we have to remember, the three modes of nature, tamas, rajas, sattva, the first status of the soul when it is anish and we mistake the ego for being the doer. Ego itself is a creation of nature. The next step, when we withdraw from the three modes of gunas and at least we know ourselves as a witness self, then we start giving sanction. That's the stage when I give a sanction to a certain movement of nature, or I don't give a sanction. So depending upon our sanction, nature takes this route or that route, depending upon the sanction. So this anumanta is important. When we learn how to give a sanction or to withdraw the sanction, then by practicing it, we reach that state when we are the master of nature, Isha, or to use an Indian word, we are truly Swami in the real sense of the word. Not simply by a dress, not simply as an epithet, but because we are master of our own being and our own nature. It's a preliminary stage in yoga. It takes a long time, but it's the fundamental necessity. Because if we are slaves of nature, we can't really go to further stages of transformation or even of liberation. Thank you.